Good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, March the 13th, 2018, 11 coming up on 12 minutes past the hour. I'm Scott Spears along with you for the second hour of the Now program today. We want to thank Bill Macy, a legendary actor best known for his portrayal as Walter Finley on the hit TV series Maude, for joining us in hour number one. And I do want to remind you, coming up on Thursday at 1:10, we're going to be joined by David Newell, who was Mr. McFeely on the hit television series Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and he's got a big announcement to make. David Newell, Thursday at 1:10 o'clock, or 1:10 p.m. You won't want to miss that. Now, coming up today, hard to believe, is one of the best-known people in show business for so many reasons. He's also very active in affairs that involve, we'll get into this later on, but people of Jewish heritage. You might remember him from the TV series Daniel Boone, or possibly from the great music group, the Ames Brothers. His work on Broadway is tremendous. His singing, he's had albums that have went to number one on the charts. And he also may be remembered very well, if you were a big fan of the Johnny Carson show, for an event involving a tomahawk in the 1960s, which is played all the time. So glad to welcome this gentleman to the program for the first time for the hour today, the legendary Ed Ames. Mr. Ames, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good to talk with you. Have wanted to have you on for a long time, so this is a lot of fun.
Good. Well, that's just fine.
Mr. Ames, I want to start. What was your childhood like?
Well, I came from a large family. We had grew up with nine children, and we were very poor. I grew up during the Depression, and we were very poor. There was, as many others were, of course. And, but, you know, I grew up like all the other kids, you know, playing games and you know, just acting like kids.
From this childhood where you didn't have a lot of money, when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I didn't really have any ambition like that. Things were so bad that you didn't look forward to going to college or having some sort of future to look forward to. You just kind of took it as it went. I mean, you just assumed that you were going to grow up and be something, but I didn't have any particular ambition.
How did the Ames brothers come to be?
Pardon me?
How did the Ames brothers come to be? How did that come together?
Well, we used to like, as kids, we used to like to harmonize. We just did it for fun. We would take these songs of the day and we would make up harmony. You know, we had good ears for music, and it was just fun. We would get together. We would just sing the songs of the day, and. As it happened, we were back in Dorchester, Massachusetts, and there was a ball field called the Franklin Field, named after Benjamin Franklin, and there was an old granite wall that that encompass the ball field. And after playing ball, we would my brothers and I would sit on the granite wall and sing, and the kids would ask us to sing. And so that's what we did. We would play ball, and then afterwards the kids would say, "Oh, sing, come on, brothers, sing us a song." And one day, the uncle of one of the kids happened to come by to pick him up, and he heard us. And he was a musician, and he worked at a nightclub called the Fox and Hounds, which was a very hoi polloi nightclub. And he was very pleased with what he heard, and he talked to the owner of the nightclub, and whose name was Eddie Davis. He was a very, very wonderful man, and remained our friend for many years. But anyway, he auditioned us, and we actually went to. I was still going to school. I was still in high school. And after school, I would go down with my brothers to the Fox and Hounds nightclub. The Kennedys were some of the people who used to come into that club and listen to us sing. And we were embarked on a career of show business.
What was it like to get up in front of people? Did you ever have stage fright or any, or did you just, it come natural to you?
It came natural, to be honest with you. I don't remember having stage fright. I do remember that I didn't know how to, I never knew the proper posture for singing before an audience. And I remember I never knew what to do. I was a big, tall, gawky kid, and I never knew what to do with my hands. And I remember seeing Pearl Bailey, the great singer and comedian, and I watched how beautifully she used her hands on stage, and it gave me something to latch onto. And after that point, I was quite comfortable with my body and my hands. And I never did have, I don't remember ever having that terrible stage fright that people ordinarily have. They say that one of the greatest fears that people have is getting up in front of an audience and having to speak or perform. And you know, that all went away, and I was very comfortable in front of an audience.
The Ames Brothers were a big hit, and then the group disbanded. Why did you guys decide to break up?
Well, we had a wonderful career. We had lots of hit records, and we played the finest places. We played Las Vegas, and we played all the great nightclubs and theaters. We played the Palladium in London. And after a while, we had a lot of hit records. And after a while, the style of music changed. And I guess you would have to say that rock and roll came in. And after a while, we realized that our kind of music was not as popular as it had been. And we all had families by that time, little growing children, and we decided that we had had a great career, but it was time to move on. And we went in various directions. One of my brothers, my brother Gene, was an artist, and he went into the field of he painted, and another brother, Joe, went to Europe and sang in the opera there, and I wound up doing a solo act, and I became very popular as a solo performer for many years. I had hit records, and I became an actor, and I performed on the stage in theater and television series and various other activities. So I was the only one that really remained in show business.
When you left being part of a singing group and you were a performer on stage by yourself, that went very well. How did it come about that you would be an actor, which is different from a singer?
I'm not. I guess I was a great fan of the theater, and I used to go to the theater, and I would look at the plays and the musicals, and I loved to. I became a great fan of the theater, and I watched the people acting on stage, and I realized that I could do that. That I had been doing something like that, even with my brothers, and even as a solo singer, I was acting out, so to speak, the songs that I was doing, and it wasn't that different between acting out as a scene in a play, and so I gravitated towards that, and I got into a couple of off-Broadway plays, and I embarked on a career of acting, and I was in a number of hit shows.
What was your first acting job?
My first acting job was a play called The Crucible. It was about the Salem witch hunts. It was a very popular Arthur Miller play, and it was a little off-Broadway theater. And a friend of mine said they're looking for somebody to play the part of the lead of John Proctor was the name of the character, and so I went up and I auditioned, and lo and behold, I was acting on a off-Broadway theater in New York, and that was the start of my career as an actor.
You worked with people like Kirk Douglas. What was Kirk Douglas like to work with?
He was wonderful. Even after all these years, we remain friends. And he was a marvelous actor, and working with, and we had a number of scenes together in the play, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and he would talk to me about, you know, I would ask him questions about acting after so many years, acting in so many movies and so forth. And he was very helpful, and he coached me. And he was a wonderful, wonderful guy, and a very brave and strong. He was just a terrific guy, and he acted sort of like my big brother, and it was a wonderful relationship, and I enjoyed working with him.
How did the TV series Daniel Boone come about?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
How did the TV series Daniel Boone come about?
Well, if you remember it was a spin-off, actually, on a show called Davy Crockett, which was a sensation when it hit the screen. Davy Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier. Fess Parker was the star of that show, Davy Crockett, and that was a very short-lived show, but very, very popular. It was kind of it swept the world, actually, that Davy Crockett movie. They decided to do a long-running television series of it, but there were some problems with the Disney company, and Fess Parker, who was the star of that show, they chose another frontier hero, Daniel Boone, and it was the same character essentially. And that's how that series came about.
You portrayed Mingo. For audiences who don't remember, what was that character?
Mingo?
Yeah.
And Mingo was of course, these were in revolutionary times. This was in colonial times. And Mingo was based on a true character. There were many American Indians who later became famous and in the regular civilized world, I'd call it, educated. Many of the American Indians were educated. They went to England. And some became generals in the Civil War. So there were educated Native Americans, and they decided it would be a very interesting character if I were an Indian prince, as I was, I became educated, I was of mixed blood in that show. Mingo was the character's name, and in the story, my father was the governor of Virginia. So I was of mixed blood. My mother was an Indian princess, and my father was the governor of Virginia, and that was the basis of who was sent to England for an education, and that was the basis of my character.
What was it like to work with Fess Parker?
Oh, Fess was just a great guy. He was from Texas, and we became friends for 40 years until he passed away. Very close friends, and he was just a wonderful, generous, easygoing person, and we had great fun doing the show. I mean, you know, we had lots of incidents during that period of when we were performing that show, and we'd had a lot of laughs, and there was a lot of fun involved, and he was just a great, great guy. And as I say, we remained rather close friends for over 40 years.
How did you get that role? Did you have to audition? Did they approach you?
I had been in a play on Broadway, and I got very good reviews, and they heard about it, the people that were putting the show, the Daniel Boone show, together, and they had seen me on Broadway, and it's kind of funny because they knew that I would be, my costume would show my physicality. You know that I was half naked sometimes, running around in the woods. So they wanted they asked me for a photograph, to send a photograph. And at the time I had been working out with weights and I was kind of buff, you know, I was in very good shape. So I took a camera in the basement of my house, and I did some exercises with with my shirt off, and sent him a selfie picture of myself, and they were satisfied that I'd look okay, and that was it.
During the run of the Daniel Boone television series, there's an incident that happens. You're on The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson on April 27th, 1965, promoting Daniel Boone. And this clip, 53 years later now, almost 53 years next month, it's been since this happened. It was played every year on the Johnny Carson anniversary show. And before Johnny went off the air on the next to last show, they got so many requests to see that one more time. You know what I'm talking. How did this come about? And tell the audience exactly what happened on the Johnny Carson Tonight Show, April 27th, 1965.
Well, prior to that, I had been on the Johnny Carson Show a number of times. I was a guest on that show. Oddly enough, I had not sung on the show. I was just there representing the Daniel Boone television series. So that particular night, before that, we had done some crazy things together, Johnny and myself. I remember I threw Argentine. I forget. It was a weapon that they use in the Argentines. And Johnny would run around, and I would chase him, and we did crazy things like that. And this one time, he asked me to, since I was on the Daniel Boone show, the Daniel Boone series, as it appeared on television, it started with a tomahawk splitting the screen, and then the show started. So he asked me if I could throw that tomahawk, and I said, "Well, I'll give it a try." And I went home and I practiced with an axe. I caught it at the hardware store, and I practiced on a tree in my backyard. And then for the night of the great tomahawk, Johnny said, "Okay." He set up a cardboard cutout of a cowboy, of a figure, and he asked me to throw the tomahawk and see if I could hit the cardboard cutout of a cowboy. So I went home and tried and practiced, and on the night of the show they changed the tomahawk I was throwing, so the weight of it was different. It was like one of those golf balls those crazy golf balls where you hit it and it bounces all over the place. Well, in this case, the tomahawk was weighted differently, and I threw it the same way at the cowboy, and I threw it at the chest, And instead of hitting with the chest, the tomahawk landed in, so we say, the nether regions of his body, and sticking out like that. And it was a very funny thing to see. Well, the audience started laughing, and they laughed and they laughed for over 4 minutes. It's the longest laugh in the history of television. It was a sensation. The next day I went to New York, and people were calling out their windows at me on Broadway and laughing, and everybody was just very funny and kind of a thing that the country took to. And it remained for many years. Johnny kept playing it over and over as the years went by, repeatedly, and it became a fixture on his show. And by the way, it was, as I understand, it was his favorite episode of his career.
Well, I just want to give the audience a little taste of it here, because the laugh is what I want people. Obviously, this is radio. Now you know what's happening. You've seen the clip. You can watch it on YouTube. But listen to this laugh, because this is one of the most amazing moments in television history. Ed Ames on The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson, 1965. Here it is.
What is the trick on it? You throw underhanded?
No.
Overhanded.
It's
then.
An overhand throw. The trick is to keep your arm extended, and that way you break the microphone. You know, you keep your arm extended and put only one revolution on the...
Once around
on the way. But that's indefinite.
It's an amazing moment, Ed, and it looks like you were, after you threw that tomahawk, that you were running over. What went through your mind when you saw where that hit?
Well, I was going to run over and cover it with my body in mock embarrassment. I mean, I really wasn't embarrassed, but I pretended to be embarrassed, and I went over to Johnny stopped me, and he understood what was going on, and he realized that we didn't have to do anything but just stand there, and we did. We just stand there, and then Johnny started making some wonderful remarks, and the laughter went on and on for 4 minutes, the longest laugh in the history of television.
As I say, that happened in April of 1965. Johnny Carson went off the air May 22nd, 1992. The night before, they were showing old clips in the last 2 weeks of the show, and the night before, they said they weren't going to show it because they'd shown it so many times, but they said they got so much mail that they wanted to see it one more time. And the night before the last night, May 21st, 1992, that's the last clip they showed, was Ed Ames throwing that tomahawk. And you know, Ed, what puzzled me was the clip was so brilliant, and it Johnny's favorite, as he said, shown every year on the anniversary shows. I was shocked when he was going off the air that he didn't have you back on in that last month.
Well, I mean, he had a lot of, you know, he had, over the years, he had had so many, many guest performers. And by the way, he had he had started so many careers for people. He was very generous with that show, and there were many, many people that that had been with him. And it didn't surprise me that he had the girl was, the comedian that he had on for the very last night. But they just picked the ones that they needed for that particular moment of closing down his show, and it was all right. You know, they had many reruns of the Carson show, and they never failed to play that one, that's for sure.
Well, that's the funny thing. 53 years later, next month, and CNN just did a show called The 60s, and that's a clip that they show. When you're sitting here, Ed, 53 years later, and they're still playing that thing on new shows after Carson's death, what do you think? Well, it's a great moment in somebody's career, but you've done so much work, but that's probably the thing that's been seen the most.
No, it was just a funny moment in my career and a great television moment, but it was only a moment. I had done many, many other things. I had many hit records and been Broadway shows and television and so forth. I did the series, so Daniel Boone. So it was just a moment in my career. It wasn't my total career by any means.
No, that's absolutely the case. But I did want to add, because there has been some talk over the years that there was some contrived nature to that just couldn't have happened. Speaking from the person who threw it, it just happened, right?
Absolutely. It was a total accident. And very often that sort of thing on television was very successful. I mean, there were other things on the Carson show and other shows as well where something unusual happened like that, and it became a landmark of television.
What was Johnny like off the set?
Johnny was a very private guy. On camera, he had the gift of gab. He was funny. He had a great sense of comedy, but off camera he was a rather shy individual, believe it or not. I remember going to a party with him once, and I said, "All right, I'll meet you at the party, whatever the address was." And there were a lot of people there, and I came there after him, and I walked into the party, and there was Johnny sitting all by himself playing solitaire.
Isn't that amazing?
he was a very modest, rather shy guy.
You know, Ed, as I say, and as you have said, your career spans so many different forms of the entertainment industry, but a lot of people remember your performance, "My Cup Runneth Over." How did that song come to you?
It was from a Broadway show, by the way. I believe the show was "I Do, I Do, I Do" was the title of the show. Mary Martin and Robert Preston. And I happened to be in Philadelphia working at a nightclub. And the show, they were breaking in the Broadway show "I Do, I Do." And the song "My Cup Runneth Over" came from that particular show. And so I was performing it in Philadelphia, and the play was playing in a theater in Philadelphia. And there was a lot of airtime, and you know, they were, the song became a hit, and they were playing it so often on the air that people became aware of the performances of the play, and the play it helped launch the success of that particular play. It was called "I Do, I Do," and it was a wonderful song, and it became a big hit.
Ed, your voice, as people can tell, still holds up very well. Do you still like to go out and perform, sing?
Not so much anymore. Now, occasionally, I will for charity. It is rather unusual that my voice remained was still useful, and my singing voice was still it lasted for a long time. Most singers after their 50s or 60s, they lose their quality. But mine continued for a long time. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, I did a charity benefit performance, and I sang a couple of songs, and it was just like I was a kid again.
I love to hear that. I want to touch on one more thing in the music career, because every Christmas I think of Ed Ames, because usually the "Do You Hear What I Hear" version that is played, Bing Crosby I think recorded it originally, but the version that's played I think most often is the Ed Ames version. How did that one come to you?
What song are you referring to?
The Christmas song, "Do You Hear What I Hear."
Oh, "Do You Hear What I Hear." Well, I did about three or four Christmas albums. That song came out of one of the albums. But I don't know that, in all honesty, I don't know that any Christmas song ever approached the popularity of Bing Crosby's "White Christmas."
I think you're right about that. But I think that when they play the version, when they play a version of that song, yours is the one they usually play, of "Do You Hear What I Hear."
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, I can't answer that question. I really don't know why that was particularly more popular than any, you know. There were other beautiful Christmas songs, but that particular one, maybe because they didn't play that particular song as much as they did the other Christmas carols, and I really don't have a true explanation for that.
It's interesting. Ed, at one point during your acting career, you became the president of the Zionist Organization of America. How did that come about?
Well, I became active in Jewish affairs. I found that I could do some good in the world by advancing the story and the activities of the Jewish people, particularly in America. And the ZOA, the Zionist Organization of America, was, I believed and still do, was the best organization of its kind. So I participated in that, and at one point I became the West Coast president.
Now, here we are in 2018. What do you think the state is of people of Jewish heritage in the United States? What work still needs to be done?
I'm sorry, I don't quite get the question. Would you repeat that?
Here in 2018, we still have a lot of things that we need to fix. As far as Jewish people, what is one of the things that we need to do away with and change to make things better?
Well, one of the terrible the terrible facts of life is that there is prejudice. There is prejudice against people of various backgrounds, the Latinos, of black people, of certain groups of people. And prejudice is a terrible, terrible blight on our civilization. I mean, we should all be accepting of people of different speech, of different color, of different backgrounds. We should just accept them as fellow human beings. And there has been a history through the ages of prejudice of one type against another. At one point, the Catholics and the Protestants, and there were wars fought unnecessarily. People died because of really stupid prejudice, and prejudice should be eliminated from our civilization.
In our political world, seems where that's a lot of legislation comes out. As far as our president, our people in charge right now, how do you think they're doing in that regard?
I don't quite understand the question.
Do you think that they are doing things to try to eliminate prejudice? Is it getting any better? Programs, things they say?
Yes, there are programs of all kinds, actually, working to eliminate prejudice and to try to establish a true brotherhood of man. And there are organizations that try to do that to eliminate prejudice of all kinds. But prejudice has come down through the ages, and it takes a long time to eliminate it. And I certainly hope that in my lifetime, and I doubt that it's going to happen, but that more and more people will accept other people of other types and races and backgrounds, and prejudice can be erased.
What do you make of our president as somebody who stays active in current events? What do you make of the state of the United States?
Well, the state of the United States is not a very happy one at the moment. It's very divided, politically divided. And and the world itself is divided. And our country is, at this point in its history, is somewhat divided. And I would certainly hope that with time we could solve our problems and settle our differences. It's not a very good time for American unity today.
Ed, we have about 5 minutes left here. When you look back at your career, what is the high point? Which part did you like the best?
I think the most exciting part was being in a play on Broadway or in a theater and enacting a role and feel the audience and their rapt attention. Either when they laugh, or you feel as a whole audience will sigh with sadness at something that's going on the stage. And there's an immediacy and a feeling of reaching out to humanity when you're acting on the stage. And I guess that's the one I enjoyed the most.
Do you have any regrets in your career? Something you didn't do or something you did you wish you hadn't?
Yes, I would like to have done more plays. I would like to have done films. I never really had a big career on the big screen, on television. Yes, but on the big screen, I didn't. I had not made many movies, and I wish I had done more of them.
If somebody came to you today with a movie script or a play, would you do it?
I'm not sure. You know, I'm 91 years old now, and I don't have the energy that I did.
What's the secret to being 91?
I haven't the faintest idea. I will say this: I was active physically all my life. Somewhere along the line, I got the right idea of staying active physically and eating the proper foods, not indulging in alcohol or drugs or anything like that. And I think that just probably, and whatever genes I have, probably carried me through to the age that I am now.
Ed, we have about 3 minutes left here, and I have two questions I want to slip in here, and I thank you so much for coming on. When I was looking up the Ames Brothers earlier on, there was a title that came up that I had never heard, Naughty Lady of Shady Lane. Do you remember that number?
I certainly do.
Now, you don't have to sing it if you don't want to, but can you give us a little bit of this song?
The naughty lady of Shady Lane has hit the town like a bomb. The lyrics of the song are describing a naughty person, a naughty woman. And at the end, the punchline is, and she's only 9 days old. I've been singing about a baby all the time. But upon listening to the song, it sounds like it was a woman of some lacking character, a naughty lady. But it turned out that it was a little baby, 9 days old. It was very popular.
You've done so many songs. Do you have a favorite one to sing? Is there one you like to do the best?
I would say there are two. One of them would be Try to Remember. I try to remember the kind of September when life was slow and oh, so mellow. Try to Remember is one of my favorites, and the other is My Cup Runneth Over.
A legendary song. Ed, when history looks back on you, I don't know anybody who's had such a diversified career, singing, Broadway, television, your great activism, the great Johnny Carson skit, all the things you've done. How do you hope history looks back on Ed Ames?
How do I hope it looks back upon me?
Yes.
Fondly.
How would you like to be remembered?
Oh, I don't know. I'd like to be remembered as a good American guy who grew up in poverty and made a career and was successful and popular. And by the way, I went back to college. I went to college. I enrolled at UCLA when I was 40 years old and graduated cum laude with honors.
Oh.
That's something I'm very proud of in my life.
Beautiful.
And I don't know. I don't know if I've answered your question or not.
No, it was great. And I do want to let people know, odd timing, this past weekend I saw a rerun of the television series In the Heat of the Night with Carol O'Connor. And there was an episode where Ed Ames plays one of Carol O'Connor's friends in the series, a sheriff from a neighboring town. And boy, was that a powerful role that you played, Ed. That was an amazing episode.
It was, and I enjoyed working with Carol O'Connor so much. He was such a wonderful, friendly guy and made me feel so comfortable doing the show. We did it down south in Georgia. We actually shot it down there, so I enjoyed working with Carol O'Connor very much.
That's one to see. Ed, this was your first visit to the show, but I hope it's not your last. I thank you for your time, and I hope we can talk again soon.
I hope so, too. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Ed Ames, a man who was part of probably one of the funniest moments in television history, The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson, April 25th, 1965, The Tomahawk Incident. 4 minutes of uninterrupted laughter. What a great show. For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
FAM is supported by...